And once again, good morning. This is the Mideast Migraine Show, the weekend edition for Saturday, June 25, 2016. And thanks to the individual who set up my previous last week's show so that you had some wonderful Arabic music to listen to. Ooh, this is so crowded. Our new studio is indeed a hole in the wall. Proverbial hole in the wall. I'm sure you hear the clunks and bangs here of my setting up store. Let's just get to the reading right away, shall we? Although I am going to put that, the album containing that same lovely music you were listening to, set that up for musical break later on. You were listening to the Rounder Records Corporation. 1997 CD, The Music of Arab Americans, a retrospective collection. Truly a storehouse of historical and, as far as I'm concerned, important musical selections from Arab Americans as early as 1916, if not before. 100 years ago, folks. Okay. Now, I'm expecting to finish this booklet, which was published originally by Jews for Justice in the Middle East and distributed by If Americans Knew. More information at www.ifamericansknew.org. Or if you can go there if you're interested in acquiring copies for yourself, or simply go to contact@ifamericansknew.org. And of course, new is spelled K-N-E-W. Oh, this place is so tiny. Well, I don't want to unburden you with my burdens. Okay, all I got to do is figure out exactly where I was last time. There's too long of a pause there. Let's crank up some music. All righty, under the did I even give you the title of the pamphlet? I don't think so. Published by Jews for Justice in the Middle East, it's called simply "The Origin of the Palestine-Israel Conflict." One of many, many, many publications with the same, or roughly the same title. But this is the one from Jews for Justice in the Middle East. Third edition, The Origin of the Palestine-Israel Conflict. Third edition, including Intifada 2000, and we'll cover that a little later. We have already covered the general topics of, once we got past the introduction, early history of the region, dating back to 3000 BC, the British Mandate period, 1920 to 1948, the United Nations partition of Palestine, which was a big joke as it turned out, the subtopic statehood and expulsion, 1948, referring to the birth of the modern state of Israel and the expulsion of the native Palestinian Arabs from their homeland to make way for that new state. The 1967 war and Israeli occupation of the West Bank and Gaza, the history of terrorism in the region, and then, very interesting subsection, Jewish criticism of Zionism. Zionism is a Jewish-born political philosophy, and there has always and consistently to this day been massive Jewish criticism of Zionism. And the section Zionism and the Holocaust. Okay, now I hear you out there screaming, just get to it, just get to it. This is to remind you, I'm going over the history of our reading of this to remind you that the readings are available on podcast. Go to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number for ALL.NET, plug-in Mideast migraines, the name of this program. I'm hoping that I called the program Mideast migraines earlier and not Mideast madness. After 4 years, I'm still liable to that slip of the tongue. But type Mideast migraines into the search box and you'll receive a listing, for the most part, the latest of my programs, both the Saturday edition and the Monday edition, which comes to you every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific time, 3 in the afternoon Pacific Daylight Time. Those programs are available for podcast if you want to pick up on those readings. And at your own leisure, when and where you want to, providing you have an internet outlet. Now, as promised, last week I have begun the process of catching up with downloading into my archives. I took a 3-month sabbatical from doing that for a couple of piddly reasons. But I managed to upload at 3 or 4 of the readings of this booklet, The Origin of the Palestine-Israel Conflict, so you can get to those when and where you want to. Okay. I'll give you the phone number here. Yes, Free Radio does have its own studio, radio studio once again, in all of its professionally equipped glory. The phone line here, we don't have 2 lines anymore. We decided just to pay for the one. Area code 831. Now, that's Santa Cruz County on the left coast of North America, right in the middle of California on the Pacific coast. 831-427-3772. Again, the phone number directly to the studio here is 831-427-3772. 831-427-3772. You can also contact me at this program's email address, or email address, MideastMadness@gmx.com. That's G as in Google, M as in Microsoft, X as in Xfinity.com. MideastMadness@gmx.com. MideastMadness@gmx.com. I will write you back, provided you have offered me an authentic, real address to get back to you with. Okay, I think we can really start now. Just for the sake of refreshing overlap or retracking here, I'm going to read 3 paragraphs that I've already read, that I read last week, just to put us on a good footing. Okay, these were items from the general considerations as a topic provided towards the end of the book. Zionism's, quote, historical right, end quote, to Palestine. Zionism's, quote, historical right to Palestine was neither historical nor a right. It was not historical in as much as it voided the 2 millennia of non-Jewish settlement in Palestine and the 2 millennia, 2,000 years roughly, of Jewish settlement outside it. It was not a right except in the romantic mysticism of, quote, blood and soil, and the romantic, quote, cult of, quote, death, heroes, and graves. Now, admittedly, I do not know exactly where those quotes come from, but I think we'll get a little light shed on that in a moment here. Professor Norman Finkelstein, from his work Image and Reality in the Israel-Palestine Conflict, said, among many other things, quote, the claim of Jewish supposed homelessness is founded on a cluster of assumptions that both negates the liberal idea of citizenship and duplicates the anti-Semitic one that the state belongs to the majority ethnic nation. In a word, the Zionist case for a Jewish state is as valid or invalid as the anti-Semitic case for an ethnic state that marginalizes Jews, end quote. Norman Finkelstein. Wrap your brain around that. I'd read it again, but I've already read it last Saturday. Something to think about there. Okay, now, how about the Zionist argument that the state of Jordan already is the Palestinian state? This from Noam Chomsky from his work, The Fateful Triangle. It is often alleged that there was, in fact, an earlier, quote, territorial compromise, and again, this is only an allegation, namely in 1922 when Transjordan was excised from the promised, quote, national home for the Jewish people, a decision that is difficult to criticize in light of the fact that, and I quote, the number of Jews living there permanently in 1921 has been reliably estimated at 2 or, according to some authorities, 3 persons. End of extraction from The Fateful Triangle, Noam Chomsky. Now, that is astounding for him to say 2 or perhaps 3 persons, individuals. I almost fell out of my seat when I read that, and I thought, oh, he must have meant 2 or perhaps 3%. But that's not what it says. It says 2 or maybe, by some authorities, 3 individuals, 3 persons, 3 men or women or children. Okay, that was the case in Jordan, according to Chomsky. Okay, flip the page over here, and this is the last, pardon me, this is the last overlapping paragraph before we get to new material, and it's, oh boy, I've got all these wires wrapped around me. I got to configure things here so I know what's going on. See, I have this computer and computer screen in front of me. Okay, why doesn't Israel, and then in quotations, the only democracy in the Middle East, have a constitution? Why doesn't Israel have a constitution? This, according to Israeli author Boaz Evron from Jewish State or Israeli Nation. These works that I'm talking about could be entire books or they could be articles or essays. I don't know. Evron says, The abstention from formulating a constitution was no accident. The massive expropriation of lands and other properties from those Arabs who fled the country as a result of the War of Independence, I personally would put that phrase in quotations, War of Independence, and of those who remain but were declared absent, as well as the confiscation of large tracts of land from Arab villagers who did not flee, and the laws passed to legalize these acts. All this would have necessarily been declared unconstitutional, null and void, by the Supreme Court, referring, of course, to the Israeli Supreme Court, being expressly discriminatory against one part of the citizenry, whereas a democratic constitution obliges the state to treat all of its citizens equally. That's why Israel does not have a constitution, according to the Israeli author Boaz Evron. Okay, now the thing is, we're on page 30, and there are a good 40 pages total of text in this pamphlet reads like a small book, critically important and obviously very honest couching of history here. So, we're on 30. We have another 10 pages to go. It is... I forgot my phone. Oh, but the clock's right in front of me. It's I got 11:27 a.m. this Saturday, June 25, 2016. This is the Mideast Migraines program on Free Radio Santa Cruz for Saturday, June 25. Free Radio Santa Cruz, he finally gets around to telling you what you're listening to, broadcasts at 101.3 on the FM dial, and... forgot my cough drops. And we are streaming online and live, streaming live after some 9 months of being without a studio. We got a studio again. Where are we streaming? Freakradio.org. www.freakradio.org. That's short for organization. I'm Ren Twill. Okay, some... Actually, 11 pages to go almost. New subsection here. A few paragraphs on Jewish fundamentalism in Israel. The fundamentalist wing of the Jewish religion, while certainly not representative of Judaism as a whole, not representative of it, is influential in Israel and is the ideological basis of the settler movement in the West Bank and Gaza, except for Greater Jerusalem, in quotes, Greater Jerusalem, where many secular Jews have moved because of cheap subsidized housing. The following quotes show the racism inherent in this fundamentalist worldview and why its influence should be opposed by all rational people. Ideological basis of racism in Israel. This, according to Israel Shahak and Morton Mezvinsky's Jewish Fundamentalism in Israel. Quote, the Talmud states, now the Talmud is, from what I understand, one of two basic religious scriptures in Judaism. The Talmud, T-A-L-M-U-D, states that two contrary types of souls exist. A non-Jewish soul comes from the satanic spheres. That's what it says, folks. Blowing me away here. While the Jewish soul stems from holiness. Rabbi Cook, K-O-O-K, Rabbi Cook the Elder, chief rabbi of Palestine in the 1920s, the revered father of the messianic tendency of Jewish fundamentalism, said... the difference between a Jewish soul and the souls of non-Jews is greater and deeper than the difference between a human soul and the souls of cattle. End quote. Wrap your mind and emotions around that statement. More on racism here, according to Shahak and Mezvinsky. Same source. Gush Emunim rabbis have continually reiterated that Jews who killed Arabs should not be punished, relying on the code of Maimonides and the Halacha, Rabbi Ariel stated, quote, a Jew who killed a non-Jew is exempt from human judgment and has not violated the religious prohibition of murder. Has not violated the religious prohibition of murder. Shades of the Ten Commandments in there, I would say. End quote. The significance here is that is most striking when the broad support, both direct and indirect, for Gush Emunim is considered. About one half of Israel's Jewish population supports Gush Emunim. Gush Emunim is a staunchly right-wing Jewish Zionist front group. The kind of people who were inclined to say those kinds of things. But again, it says about one half of Israel's Jewish population supports Gush Emunim. Now, Jewish fundamentalist rationale, Jewish fundamentalist Rationale for Seizing Arab Land. This from Shahak and Mezvinsky again. Same source, same literary source. They argue that what appears to be confiscation of Arab-owned land for subsequent settlement by Jews is in reality not an act of stealing, but one of sanctification. From their perspective, the land is being redeemed by being transferred from the satanic to the divine sphere. To further this process, the use of force is permitted whenever necessary. Halacha, and again, forgive me for not having a definition for the word halacha. Maybe I can find it on the net or something after the next musical break. Halacha permits Jews to rob non-Jews in those locales wherein Jews are stronger than non-Jews. Pretty radical, huh? Let me just stretch out this thing here. Help me get a handle on... There we go. It's more easily readable. It is 11:33 a.m. this Saturday, June 25th, and you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. 101.3 FM, streaming live at freakradio.org. The phone number again is area code 831-427-3772. I hope I can hear the ringer because I'm not looking directly at the flashing lights. Okay, well, I just picked up the handset here, so I know the phone is working. I hear dial tone. All right, here's a new general section of the book, Intifada II and the, quote, peace process, end quote. The flaws of the Oslo Accords. This is according to Edward Said, a man who was born in Palestine and fled with his family to America. Edward Said from The Progressive magazine, no doubt, March 1998, quote, the United States has been a terrible, quote, sponsor of the peace process. It has succumbed to Israeli pressure on everything, abandoning the principle of land for peace. Parenthetically, no UN resolution says anything about returning a tiny percentage as opposed to all of the land Israel seized in 1967. Pushing the lifeless Palestinian leadership into deeper and deeper holes to suit Netanyahu's preposterous demands. The fact is that Palestinians are dramatically worse off than they were before the Oslo process began. Their annual income is less than half of what it was in 1992, 24 years ago, folks. They are unable to travel from place to place. More of their land has been taken than ever before. More settlements exist. And Jerusalem is practically lost to the Palestinians, that is. Every house demolishment, every expropriated dunam, dunam is an area of land, kind of like an acre, every arrest and torture, every barricade, every closure, every gesture of arrogance and intended humiliation simply revives the past and reenacts Israel's offenses against the Palestinian spirit, land, and body politic. To speak about peace in such a context is to try to reconcile the irreconcilable. The late Edward Said. I'm going to take a quick look at the listenership, current listenership of my program to see just how encouraged I should be. And yes, folks, I have a magic box that gives me such information, at least as far as online listeners is concerned. We do transmit at 101.3 FM, pretty much to the bounds of the city of Santa Cruz, California. Oh, that's nice. Nice to hear, to see. Okay, number of listeners. Yeah, we'll make sure our transmitter is working. Looks good to me. And just one more click here. Oh, this is very nice, very encouraging. Okay, let's continue here. Continue learning, teaching and learning. The Roots of Intifada II. Now, this very long piece is extracted from the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs, a fine periodical magazine from December 2000. From Rachel Marshall's article, "The Peace Process Ends in Protests and Blood." Roots of Intifada II. Quote, "The explosion of Palestinian anger last September 29 put an end to the charade begun at Oslo 7 years ago and labeled the, quote, peace process. In 1993, Palestinians, along with millions of people around the world, were led to hope that Israel would withdraw from the West Bank and Gaza within 5 years and that Palestinians would then be free to establish an independent state. Meanwhile, both sides would work out details of Israel's withdrawal and come to an agreement on the status of Jerusalem, the future of Israeli settlements, and the return of Palestinian refugees." This was the oh-so-long-ago lauded Oslo peace plan, referring to Oslo, Norway, where the initial negotiations took place. Continuing now with the text. "Because of the lopsided balance of power, negotiations went nowhere, and the Palestinians' hopes were never fulfilled. The Israelis, regardless of which government was in power, quibbled over wording, demanded revisions of what had previously been agreed to, then refused to abide by the new agreements," referring to Israel now. "Meanwhile, successive governments were demolishing Palestinian homes, taking over Arab neighborhoods in East Jerusalem for Jewish housing, Jewish-only housing, and seizing Palestinian land for new settlements. A massive new highway network built after 1993 on confiscated Palestinian land isolates Palestinian towns and villages from one another and from Jerusalem, forcing many Palestinians to go through Israeli checkpoints just to get to the next town." In other words, regardless of whether or not Jerusalem was included in your travel itinerary, just to get from small town to small town, you had to go through a checkpoint. Continuing now, "According to President Clinton and most of the media, Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak conceded at Camp David virtually everything the Palestinians wanted, and Yasser Arafat threw away the opportunity for peace by rejecting Barak's offer." This according to Clinton and most of the media, at least the American media. "In fact," it says here, "Arafat could not accept it. Barak, backed by Clinton, wanted assurance of Israel's continued strategic control over the West Bank and Gaza, including airspace and borders." Israel would remain in control of this new state of Palestine's airspace and borders. "Insisted that Israel retain permanent sovereignty over most of East Jerusalem, including Haram al-Sharif." This was no, This was a deal no Arab would accept. "As the protests grew, army helicopters rocketed neighborhoods in several Palestinian cities, destroying entire city blocks and causing scores of casualties. Israeli tanks surrounded Palestinian towns with their guns turned toward the town. Armed Israeli civilians within the Green Line rampaged through Arab neighborhoods, destroying Arab property and shouting death to Arabs." This was in the State of Israel proper, within the Green Line. "Israeli police, who were quick to use bullets against Palestinian stone throwers, failed to restrain the Israelis and instead fired at Arabs trying to defend their homes. Two Arabs were killed. The uprising was undoubtedly fueled by the resentment caused by years of daily abuse and humiliation under Israeli occupation. On September 6th, a group of Israeli border police stopped three Palestinian workers as they were returning home from Israel and, for no reason at all, subjected them to 40 minutes of torture. The San Francisco Chronicle reported on September 19 that the policemen punched the three men, slammed their heads against a stone wall, force them to swallow their own blood, and curse their mothers and sisters. The incident only came to light because the policemen took photographs of themselves with their victims, holding their heads by the hair like hunting trophies. Israeli human rights workers... Whoopsie. I'm sorry for the interruption here. Let me get rid of that. Some weird thing popped up on the screen. You see, I'm reading from a print pamphlet, not from my computer screen. I'm not reading online. I've got paper in front of me, and it's kind of difficult with the semi-malplaced microphone boom here, which really is still a hell of a lot easier and smoother than trying to record a program on my own PC with its embedded microphone, and accidentally leaning the pamphlet onto keys on my keyboard, weird things pop up. I'm sorry. Let's backtrack slightly. This page here. The incident only came to light because the policemen took photographs of themselves. Of themselves with their victims, holding their heads by the hair like hunting trophies. Israeli human rights workers said such beatings are a common occurrence, but they are seldom reported. Again, according to Rachel Marshall, the peace process ends in protests and blood. Washington Report on Middle East Affairs, December 2000. A little more music here so I can rest my throat. Give this a second shot here. New subtitle, in quotes, Israel has failed the test. This from Israeli journalist Amira Haas. Israel has failed the test in Israeli newspaper Haaretz, dating back to 2000. October 18 issue, to be specific. Israel has failed the test. In the Oslo agreements, Israel and the West put the Palestinian leadership to a test. In exchange for an Israeli promise to gradually dismantle the mechanisms of the occupation in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, the Palestinian leadership promised to stop every act of violence and terror immediately, as the process began. For that purpose, all the apparatus for security coordination was created. More and more Palestinian jails were built, and demonstrators were barred from approaching the Jewish settlers. The two sides agreed to on a period of 5 years for completion of the new deployment and the negotiations on a final agreement. The Palestinian leadership agreed again and again to extend its trial period. Well, let me reread that. The Palestinian, in spite of Israel's intransigence, backtracking, and lies, the Palestinian leadership agreed again and again to extend its trial period. From this perspective, Israel was also put to a test. Was Israel really giving up its attitude of superiority and domination, built up in order to keep the Palestinian people under its control? More than 7 years have gone by, and Israel has security and administrative control of 61.2% of the West Bank and about 20% of the Gaza Strip, and security control over another 26.8% of the West Bank. Technically supposed to be Palestinian land, just over control over Israeli control, just over a quarter of it. Continuing, this control is what has enabled Israel to double the number of settlers in 10 years and to seal an entire nation into restricted areas, imprisoned in a network of bypass roads meant for Jews only. Israel has failed the test. Palestinian control of 12% of the West Bank does not mean that Israel has given up its attitude of superiority and domination. The bloodbath that has been going on for 3 weeks, back in 2000 here, is the natural outcome of 7 years of Israeli lying and deception. Amira Haas from Haaretz, the fall of 2000. Jimmy Carter's simple statement of the facts. I'm trying to barrel through this now so we will finally finish this pamphlet in actuality. Jimmy Carter's simple statement of the facts, November 2000. Many years after Carter's presidency, by the way, November 2000. An underlying reason that years of U.S. diplomacy have failed and violence in the Middle East persists is that some Israeli leaders continue to, quote, create facts by building settlements in occupied territory. These are all the words of Jimmy Carter, in fact. I forgot to impress that. Underlying reason that years of U.S. diplomacy have failed and violence in the Middle East persists is that some Israeli leaders continue to create facts on the ground, as it were, by building Jewish-only settlements in occupied territory. At Camp David in September 1978, the bilateral provisions led to a comprehensive and lasting treaty between Egypt and Israel, made possible at the last minute by Israel's agreement to remove its settlers from the Sinai. That was in 78, a treaty between Israel and Egypt. But similar constraints concerning the status of the West Bank and Gaza have not been honored and have led to continuing confrontation and violence. Concerning UN Resolution 242, our governments, the U.S. government's legal commitment to support this well-balanced resolution has not changed. It was clear that Israeli settlements in the occupied territories were a direct violation of this agreement and were, according to the long-stated American position, both illegal and an obstacle to peace. Accordingly, Prime Minister Begin, Menachem Begin, pledged that there would be no establishment of new settlements until after the final peace negotiations were completed. But later, under Likud pressure, the ruling Likud political party, Begin declined to honor this commitment. Another Israeli lie. You make a commitment and then you renege on it. Continuing, it is unlikely that real progress can be made as long as Israel insists on its settlement policy, illegal under international laws that are supported by the United States and all other nations. I believe that means support the international laws against the settlement policy are supported by the U.S. and other nations. Continuing, there are many questions as we continue to seek an end to violence in the Middle East, but there is no way to escape the vital one, land or peace. Former President Jimmy Carter in the Washington Post, November 26, 2000. America, an impartial mediator. This according to Phil Reeves in The Independent, the UK Independent, October 2000. America's credibility as mediator has long been questioned by Palestinians, and with reason. The Palestinians always complain that we know the details of every proposal from the... The Palestinians always complain that we know the details of every proposal from the Americans before they do, according to one Israeli government source, which told The Independent recently. So an Israeli says, the Palestinians always complain that we, the Israelis, know the details of every proposal from the Americans before the Palestinians do. There's good reason for that. We write them. The Israelis do. End of that piece. America, an impartial mediator. Okay, Intifada 2, an overview. This from Hussein Ibish, Communications Director of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, in the Los Angeles Times, October 2000. Ibish says, writes, there is, in the final analysis, only one way to stop the violence, and that is to end the occupation. The desire for liberation will eventually always bring an occupied people out into the streets, stones in hand, ready to face the might of powerful armies, preferring to risk death than live in bondage. This is not extreme nationalism or racism or religious fervor. It is the need to be free. Occupation means a reality of unending violence. Occupation does. It means being surrounded by an abusive foreign army that enforces a social system indistinguishable from apartheid. Confiscations of land that is then given to hundreds of thousands of Israeli settlers in Jewish-only communities linked by Jewish-only roads. Home demolitions of Palestinians, torture, cities cut off from each other, closed down, besieged on a regular basis. It means living in a massive prison. Since 1967, there has been only one workable solution to the conflict. The plan is articulated in UN Security Council Resolution 242, which sets up a two-part land for peace solution. Part one holds that Israel must withdraw from the territories occupied in 1967. Part two calls for all states in the region to live in peace within secure and recognized boundaries. All states in the region, both Israel and Palestine and neighboring Jordan, Egypt, Syria, and Lebanon, etc. Continuing with the document here, every peace process document from the Madrid summit to the final Camp David communique reiterates that the aim of the negotiations is the implementation of 242. The Palestinian obligations under 242 were fulfilled years ago. The Palestinian Authority recognized Israel and its 1967 borders and its right to live in peace and security in those borders. The Israeli obligation, withdrawal from the occupied territories, is utterly unfulfilled. Hussein Ibish, Communications Director of American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee in the L.A. Times back in 2000. And it's 2 minutes to 12 noon, Saturday, June 26, 2016. You're listening to the Mideast Migraines program on Free Radio Santa Cruz, streaming live at freakradio.org. That's freakradio.org. If you want to listen on your device, simply go to our website, click on the red oval on top of the transmitter, or simply click on the listen link and follow the instructions pertinent to you picking up our program. Don't forget to turn or hook up your speakers on. My English was terrible there. We're also broadcasting to the city of Santa Cruz at 101.3 on the FM dial. Now, 1 minute to 12 noon. Albright stands Albright stands the facts on their heads. This would be referring to Madeleine Albright, former Secretary of State, I believe, of the United States. And this section was written by Palestinian activists Hanan Ashrawi in The Progressive, December 2000. Hanan Ashrawi is a personal hero of mine. She has long been involved with, including being a member of, the Palestine National Congress. She's probably retired from that now, but she continues to actively write and promote the Palestinian narrative and cause. I heard her speak once in Minneapolis. I don't think she read my question on the 3x5 card, though. Can't even remember what the question was. Not offhand. Okay, Albright stands the facts on their heads. Written by Hanan Ashrawi. Quote, with the same deadpan, expressionless, emotionless, glazed look, Madam Albright repeated, those Palestinian rock throwers have placed Israel under siege, adding that the Israeli army is defending itself. Yeah, the army is defending itself from rock throwers. But it is Israel that is the belligerent occupant of Palestine, says Ashrawi. Israel is the belligerent occupant of Palestine, and not the other way around. Israeli tanks and armored vehicles are surrounding Palestinian villages, camps, and cities, and not the other way around. Israeli, which is to say American-made, Apache gunships, attack helicopters, are firing Lao and other missiles at Palestinian protesters and homes, and not the other way around. It is Israel that is confiscating Palestinian land and importing Jewish settlers to set up illegal armed settlements in the heart of Palestinian territory, and not the other way around. The settlers on the rampage in the West Bank are Israelis terrorizing Palestinians in their own homes, not the other way around. Israel is committing atrocities against the Palestinians with total impunity. Loud vehicle that might have ran over my sentence there. Israel is committing atrocities against the Palestinians with total impunity, and yet you maintain Israel is besieged. What Arafat was offered. Okay, it's important to pay attention. It's a very short piece here. But how often have we heard that Arafat couldn't say yes? Supposed to be a semi-humorous, ironic twist to the PLO's supposed refusal to make peace with Israel. Well, let's hear this part of it. What Arafat was offered, and this according to Israeli peace activist Yuri Avneri, 12 conventional lies about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict from Palestine Media Watch, www.pmwatch.org. What Arafat was offered. Barak, Prime Minister of Israel, appears to be asking for only 10% of the occupied territories. In reality, it's closer to 30%. Taking into account the territories he wants to annex in the Jerusalem area and place under his, quote, security control in the Jordan Valley. But even worse, in the map submitted to the Palestinians, these percentage points cut the country up from east to west and from north to south so that the Palestinian state will consist of a group of islands, each surrounded by Israeli settlers and soldiers. World opinion is always on the side of the underdog. In this fight, we are Goliath and they are David. World opinion says that Israel is Goliath and the Palestinians are David. In the eyes of the world outside the U.S., the Palestinians are fighting a war of liberation against a foreign occupation. We are in their territory, not they in ours. We settle on their land, not they on ours. We are the occupiers, they are the victims. This is the objective situation, and no minister of propaganda can change that. Israeli peace activist Yuri Avneri. I've got to read that whole thing. 12 conventional lies about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. An Israeli's open letter to a friend in Peace Now. Peace Now is a very old Israeli peace activism group comprised primarily of Israeli Jews, which has pretty much gotten nowhere in all of its activities over the decades in terms of establishing a genuine peace between the two sides. There are indeed many Israeli Jews, as well as American Jews, a great number of them, who are opposed to Israeli Zionism and predominance over the native Palestinian Arabs. Okay, an Israeli's open letter to a friend in Peace Now. This from Michael or Mikado Warshavsky. The party is over. An open letter to a friend in Peace Now from Znet. If I can only dismiss this phlegm from deep in my throat. Quote, it has been 7 years exactly since I wrote my last letter to you. It was the day after the signing of the Oslo Accords when you invited me to dance with you in Menorah Square. Permit me to quote for you a few passages from that old letter. Quoting here from the old letter, you danced in the square because you were happy about this peace. Not just plain peace, but a blend of peace, security, Palestinian chest beating over sins committed, which is to say renunciation of terror, and far-reaching concessions by the other side. A peace that you can be proud of. A peace, so you boast, for which we are giving nothing. Parenthetically, just a tiny bit, whispers the Prime Minister. And gaining much recognition, greater security, a halt to the Intifada, renunciation of terrorism, being relieved of the Arabs, and more. They're talking about the Israelis here. All these things in favor of Israel. Continuing, you are happy about this peace, and in its honor you invite me to dance with you. No, thank you. You got rid of Gaza and you separated Israelis from Palestinians. You gave them the dirty work and you didn't even promise withdrawal or a real state. Could peace possibly be bought more cheaply? Wish I knew which year this was written in. Continuing to quote from that former letter, I, by contrast, see peace as an end and not merely as a means. And call for getting out of the occupied territories, because we have nothing to be there for. Even if the occupation did not cost us even one victim or 1 cent, and I am against shooting children and adults simply because it is forbidden to shoot children or ordinary civilians. Okay, now this person is writing anew in this second letter. Since the writing of these lines, you celebrated the peace and you became fat and prosperous. The repeated and varied violations of the agreements did not move you, not to speak of any change in our culture of war and occupation, the arrogant tone of those negotiating in our name, and their attempts to demand more and more in exchange for less and less. What is there to be confused about? A conquering army is using tanks and helicopter gunships to disperse demonstrations. What is so hard to understand here? There is an occupation and there is a struggle against the occupation. There are demonstrators and there is an army that has received orders to shed their blood. And don't come to me with the story of the rifles. Your glorious war record qualifies you to understand that even CNN reporters, understand that those rifles do not endanger either Israel or the soldiers if they don't get too close. From a 1993 letter, he continues Okay, once again, quoting the 1993 letter. Peace is a tango that takes two equal partners dancing in unity. It is not a dance of one who drags around his partner at will. The tango. In your dance of peace, you have no partners, only enemies. For your peace is his occupation. Your success is his loss. Peace is still far away because peace demands honesty, because peace demands equality. Boy, the typos are picking up here towards the end of the book. It's precarious. Continuing. You want to force them to lie. You want of them a peace of surrender. You are celebrating a peace of master and slave. Under such conditions, there will perhaps be peace and quiet, but peace, no. But peace, no. Not until you open your eyes and your hearts. Not until we are ready for a peace of partnership and equality. Okay, going back and forth between an original letter and a follow-up letter. Michael Mikado Warshawski. The party is over. An open letter to a friend in peace now. You deserve a little more music here. And I'm going to see what I can do about refreshing my glottal stop and larynx.
Ya, 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 albi. فرحني لما يا قلبي يا قلبي يا قلبي لما يا قلبي يا قلبي يا قلبي يا قلبي يا thank you.
هناك كليوباترا المطربة حنان.
Thank you.
and you are listening to the Mideast Migraines program on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, streaming live once again at freakradio.org. Click on the listen link or the red oval on top of the transmission tower. Notes about what you've been listening to. The Music of Arab Americans, a retrospective collection, Rounder Records Corporation, Cambridge, Massachusetts, from 1997. That last track was Awakef Ala Shat Bahir, or Standing on the Shore, including Hanan vocalist Joe Bedway on the oud, other instrumentations, the Kunan, Haki Obadia, and Naeem Karakand, violin, drum, woodblocks, and chorus. The composer was Zaghloul Al-Damnoor, and this is going back to the late 1940s, I believe. Waqef Ala Shat Bahir, Standing on the Shore. Before you heard that, Arabic dance, or Raqs Arabi. This recording... Syrian violinist Naeem Karakand must have arrived in the United States during the second decade of the century, because his earliest recordings with American mainstream labels date to 1915 or before. He continued performing and recording both as a soloist and sideman until well into the 1960s. And before that was Alama Ya Albi. When, O Heart of Mine, announcement, you heard a spoken announcement before the music began. Istiwanat Alamfun Almutaba Sana. Alamfan Records, the singer Sana. Okay. Enough of those details.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Compact disc there. It is incumbent upon me to remind everyone of the fact that you are listening to a completely illegal operation, at least insofar as our ability to transmit it on the airwaves is concerned. We would not be a true pirate radio service if we only did this on the internet. And yes, in recent years, there have been periods of only our stream, our online stream, being available because, for technical and or political reasons, we have had to go through long periods of not being able to use our transmitter. In fact, we've had to physically remove it, take it down in some cases. It's the whole thing is a pirate underground grassroots community effort, not nearly on a par, the same thing as, say, the community aspirations of National Public Radio or California Public Radio, whatever it calls itself. This is strictly homespun radio service. And we've been in existence since March, or maybe it was April. I think it was March of 1995. So we've been liberating the airwaves of Santa Cruz since for 21 years now. Therefore, you guessed it, we continually need to ask for donations from you. Check and money orders payable to FRSC. No cash, please. If you want to support this service, whether or not you support or care to support this particular program, if you like the general idea, please indicate that. You can include a note with your money. Send to FRSC. Post Office Box 7811, Santa Cruz. Now, that's two words, S-A-N-T-A, as in ho-ho-ho, Cruz, C-R-U-Z, California, Ka, zip 95061. I'll say it again. Check or money orders only, please. Payable to FRSC. Address it in an envelope, too. FRSC, standing for Free Radio Santa Cruz. I suppose you could spell it out if you want. P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz, California 95061. You may pay via PayPal online. Go to freakradio.org/donate.html. You need to include the .html if you want to utilize our PayPal link. So that's freakradio.org/donate.html. This free radio operation, one of only two that I'm aware of in the entire state, whereas there was once something of a proliferation of them, and the others have, for one reason or another, bitten the dust. Free radio, and I think there's a station up in Berkeley that operate on a pirate broadcasting and streaming basis. Only ones in California. We here at FRSC in Santa Cruz will soon be expanding our schedule and our collective of radio producers and hosts. New people are solicited, and we have a small number of them lined up so far who have shown an interest in applying and doing their own shows. This is indeed community radio for the masses. And for the unmasses as well, I suppose. So we're getting bigger and better. It is now far more likely that the programs you hear on our signal, online or otherwise, broadcast or otherwise, will be the same as what you read from our schedule, which is also at freakradio.org. Click on schedule. There was a time when there was little, if any, meaning or order to everything before, say, 2 or 3 in the afternoon. We, quite frankly, were simply not staying on top of maintaining the listed schedule, really because we didn't have the manpower, believe it or not. But we've come up with a way to more readily and more easily, for our sake, maintain the schedule that it says on our schedule. So pretty much now what you hear is what you get. What you're getting is what it says on the schedule. So a couple of very pivotal and vital improvements to free radio. Okay, back to the reading. Put on my drugstore-bought cheapo reading glasses here. May as well grab a coffee again. Oh, that helps. Okay, where was I? I think the last thing I read to you, Barack promised peace and brought war, not by accident, and ended with, started a policy of mafia-like liquidations, causing an inevitable escalation of the violence. I'll just read the whole damn thing again. Make sure it's under our belts. But yeah, that must have finished with the party is over. Open letter to a friend in peace now, from Michael Mikado Warshawski. This is Barack. This is a quotation now. Ehud Barak, Prime Minister of Israel at the time, promised peace and brought war, and not by accident. Barak promised peace and brought war, and not by accident. While speaking about peace, he enlarged the settlements, cut the Palestinian territories into pieces by bypass roads, confiscated lands, demolished homes, uprooted trees, paralyzed the Palestinian economy, conducted negotiations in which he tried to dictate to the Palestinians a peace that amounts to capitulation, was not satisfied with the fact that by accepting the Green Line, the boundary between the State of Israel and the territories, the balance of what's supposed to be free Palestine, the Palestinians have already given up 78% of their historic homeland, over three-quarters of it. Wasn't satisfied with that fact. He demanded the annexation of settlement blocks, existing settlements and areas for expansion, and pretended that they amount only to 3% of the territory, while in fact he meant that more than 20% would remain under Israeli control. Wanted to coerce the Palestinians to accept a, quote, state cut off from all its neighbors and composed of several enclaves isolated from each other, each surrounded by Israeli settlers and soldiers, boasts publicly that he has not given back to the Palestinians one inch of territory. He boasted about that. When the Intifada broke out, sent snipers to shoot in cold blood from a distance, hundreds of unarmed demonstrators, adults and children. Barak blockaded each village and town separately, bringing them to the verge of starvation in order to get them to surrender, bombarded neighborhoods, and started a policy of mafia-like liquidations, causing an inevitable escalation of the violence, end quote. This, according to Israeli peace activist Yuri Avneri, February 3rd, 2001. That quotation brought to us through GushShalom.org, Gush-Shalom.org, or for hair splitters, www.Gush, G-U-S-H, hyphen, Shalom, S-H-A-L-O-M.org. And again, all these subheadings here refer to, they're all on the topic of Intifada II and the so-called peace process. Oh, are we going to finish this? I've got Tad, more than a half hour to do that. What closure means, closure in quotes. Just an hour's drive from Jerusalem, a cruel drama has been underway for the past 5 months, the likes of which have not been seen since the early period of the Israeli occupation. But the majority of Israelis are taking absolutely no interest in it. The iron grip of the closure in its new format is increasingly strangling a population of 2.8 million people, yet no one is saying a word. It has to be said starkly and simply, there has never been a closure like this there, in the land of the barriers and the closures. In the worst of times of the previous Intifada, the first Intifada, when the Israeli so-called defense forces was in every corner and curfew reigned supreme, there was not a situation in which a whole people was jailed without a trial and without the right to appeal. Israel has split the West Bank by means of hundreds of trenches, dirt ramparts, and concrete cubes, which have been placed at the entrance to most of the towns and villages. No one enters and no one leaves. Not those who are pregnant, and not those who are dying. There isn't even a soldier with whom one can plead and beg. A network of bizarre Burma roads that break through the encirclement are sending an entire people along muddy, rocky routes, with the situation aggravated by a substantial risk of getting caught or getting shot by soldiers who often open fire on the desperate travelers. Never before has there been distress and suffering on this scale among the Palestinians in the territories. They will engender unprecedented despair, and ultimately they will spark violence more cruel and painful than anything seen so far. Their hardship will be transformed into more and more terrorist attacks. Their hardship will be transformed into more and more terrorist attacks. This is the point. The horrific distress of the Palestinians because of the present closure will quickly turn into the distress of the Israelis. The current siege, a shamefully appalling operation, must be lifted quickly. This must not be made conditional on the cessation of the violence, because the siege itself is the most effective spur of the violence. Israeli writer Gideon Levy in Haaretz, March of 2001. I'll grab my mouse here again and check out the stats. I know you don't fully understand exactly what it is I'm doing, but oh my, for shame. Lost a loser there on that channel. And, oh, you're kidding. Okay, well, they come and they go. And, wait a minute. Oh, apparently I am Keo. No change. No change. That's good. Okay, that was the statement on closure. Now, statement by the Deputy Speaker of the Israeli Knesset, or Parliament, in March of 2001, the date of that last thing that I read to you. Statement by the Deputy Speaker of the Knesset. This week, Israel's policy of blockading the villages and towns of the West Bank and Gaza reached pernicious and horrifying heights. Residents in the territories have not been able to move beyond the limited perimeters of their homes. Children are prevented from attending school. People cannot get to work. The sick remain without medical care. Food supplies, already scarce, are dwindling. People are truly suffering. Collective punishment of civilians is a gross violation of human rights. The imposition of a choking closure, or for that matter, a breathing closure, note the insensitivity of official terminology, choking closure, breathing closure, it says here, and continues, is effectively strangulating millions of Palestinians and creating immense human misery. The purposes of the closure policy are as ambiguous as they are counterproductive. Ostensibly, the blockade of Palestinians is meant to curb terrorist acts. But for every terrorist caught in such a net, tens are bred in the morass of hunger, anger, and frustration evoked by these pernicious restrictions. Put you away here. The damage wrought by the closure is unspeakable. Israel has exposed itself to justifiable international condemnation. Above all, Israel has directly caused untold human misery. As long as the territories captured in 1967 are under Israeli control, Israel bears full responsibility for what occurs in those areas. Protestations notwithstanding, the paralysis of Palestinians is an Israeli action. And the moral onus is Israel's to bear. A most shameful and ethically indefensible burden indeed. It should neither be excused nor condoned. The blockades must be lifted and the policy of closures must be stopped now. This was said by Naomi Chazon, Deputy Speaker of the Israeli Knesset. Quoted in Jerusalem Post, March 16, 2001. With the name Chazon, Naomi Chazon, I would guess that that is a Jewish member of Knesset, although there are Arab members with Arab names in the Knesset. Remarkable, you may say, that such a thing could be said in Israel's governing houses there of its oh-so-fragile democracy, oh-so-meaningful democracy. I'm being ironic here and cynical. I have read similar statements that at least are allowed to be read, or people get away with saying them out loud, in the conductions of Parliament in Israel. I also want to point out that it speaks here, that last extraction speaks of the damage wrought by the closure is unspeakable. Israel has exposed itself to justifiable international condemnation. Above all, Israel has directly caused untold human misery. It's my contention that there will never be peace in the Holy Land, Palestine and Israel, in that general area, unless and until the Israeli people are educated to a far greater degree about what their own so-called defense forces, their supposed erstwhile security forces, are really doing in land that they occupy against the law, and realize that the actions of the IDF, or IOF, or more in reality, occupation forces or offensive forces, are creating are the source of the greatest instability and the greatest threat to the state of Israel. All right. So much for Intifada II. We are in the last few pages and getting pretty close to the end of the program here, but easily cover this. Views of the future. Views of the future, according to this pamphlet I'm reading, The Origin of the Palestine-Israel Conflict, 3rd edition, published by Jews for Justice in the Middle East. And I apologize for not having a publishing date. Views of the future. A future free of ethnocentrism. Pay close attention now as we sum things up. This by Edward Said, the late Edward Said, Arab American, whose family fled their homeland in Palestine, from the Progressive, March 1998. Quote, "The first challenge, then, is to extract acknowledgement from Israel for what it did to us," what I was just talking about a moment ago. "But then, I believe, we must also hold out the possibility of some form of coexistence in which a new and better life, free of ethnocentrism and religious intolerance, could be available. If we present our claims about the past as ushering in a form of mutuality and coexistence in the future, a long-term positive echo on the Israeli and Western side will reverberate." Edward Said. Israeli professor calls for a new Zionism. Professor of political science Ze'ev Sternhell, in Tikkun, a magazine, May, June issue, 1998. "It was our nationalism which drew the country into an occupation and settlement of the West Bank. None of the leaders of the labor movement believe that the Palestinians deserved the same rights as Jews because none of them believed in universal rights." And this is the labor movement now, supposedly perhaps the most recognizable liberal political party in Israel. "None of the leaders of the labor movement believe that the Palestinians deserve the same rights as Jews because none of them believe in universal rights, pretending, like Arthur Hertzberg and others do, that the occupation and the colonial situation created in the last 30 years was merely the product of the Arab refusal to recognize Israel, is no more than looking for an alibi and falsifying history. The time has come to say that if the settlements in Judea and Samaria," referring to the West Bank, Free Palestine, "or in the very heart of Hebron, are the natural, logical, and legitimate continuation of the original intention of Zionism, then we need another Zionism. If a Jewish state, as such, that does not recognize the absolute equality of all human beings is considered to be closer to the spirit of the founding fathers than a new liberal Zionism, then it is time to say goodbye to the ghosts of the founders and to start forgoing for ourselves, and to start forging for ourselves an identity detached from the mystical ramifications of our religion and the irrational side of our history." Israeli professor of political science, Ze'ev Sternhell, 1998. Okay, that is the literary meat of this pamphlet. There are 2.5 more pages that I need to get through here because the people who wrote this synopsis of the origin of the Palestine-Israel conflict, who were Jewish, written and edited by Jews, have some other important follow-up material here. Sources for further research on Palestine and Israel. These short quotes do not, of course, prove the assertions made here. The historical evidence, however, is overwhelming and is available in fully documented form in the books cited below. It says above, but it means below. The short quotes they're referring to are the ones that have comprised most of this booklet. The point is they're backed up by, as they say here, full documentation in the form of books cited here. Particularly useful sources are, I'll name at least a few of them, Palestine and Israel, A Challenge to Justice by John Quigley, Duke University Press, 1990. Noam Chomsky's The Fateful Triangle, the United States, Israel, and the Palestinians, and, quote, arguably the most important intellectual alive, referring to the author Chomsky, professor at MIT. Arguably the most important intellectual alive. South End Press, 1983. Original Sins, Reflections on the History of Zionism in Israel by Benjamin Beit Halami. An Honest History of Zionism by a noted Israeli scholar who teaches at Haifa University, Israel. Olive Branch Press, 93. Bitter Harvest by Sami Hadawi. A very complete look at the documentary evidence of the creation of the State of Israel by a Palestinian Christian who lived through that period. Sami Hadawi, Palestinian Christian. Caravan Books, 1979. For articles from the alternative and Israeli press, please see ZNet at IBBS.org and commondreams.org/fusearchive.htm. A wealth of information on Palestine, Israel, Palestine/Israel, is to be found at geocities.com. Another very useful resource is A Jewish Voice for Peace, whom I have quoted innumerable times and even read a similar short book by on the topic of anti-Semitism and taking a new look at the whole thing about anti-Semitism. To join JVP's mailing list, email, well, here's the, again, I don't know how long ago this was written, but I would recommend simply Googling Jewish Voice for Peace or JVP and looking for a contact email there. The one they give, the email they give here is Shelensky, Shelensky, at socrates.berkeley.edu. Another source, not in my name, a group of Jews organizing a national coalition of activists opposed to the Israeli occupation. Yeah, folks, I told you there are millions of Jews, a substantial number of Jewish people, though both secular and practicing, around the world, in this country, and more in Israel, who are turning against Zionism, who are feeling betrayed by Zionism, who see its unworkability, and who see Zionism as archaic and improper in the modern world. And they're giving a number of Jewish, and mostly Jewish sources here. Not in my name, a group of Jews organizing a national coalition of activists opposed to the Israeli occupation. They can be reached at www.notinmyname.org. Notinmyname.org. The American Educational Trust, publisher of the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs, a great magazine, it says here, and I would agree with that. I've seen a couple of issues. Washington Report on Middle East Affairs has a large selection of its own books available. Write for their free catalog to their address. I'm not going to give this stuff out here because I take it for granted people are not copying down everything I'm saying. And our booklet, this booklet that I've been reading from you to you from for the past 4 or 5 Saturdays, can also be found on the web. This booklet is available on the web. I just found that out. At www.cactus48.com. That's CACTUS48.com, cactus48.com. All right. Now, in the quarter hour we have remaining of this program, or less, depending on how quickly I can get through these two separate conclusions here. There's conclusion one for Jewish readers and conclusion two. I'll read them in order. Page 39. Conclusion one for Jewish readers. As we have seen, the root cause of the Palestine-Israel conflict is clear. During the 1948 war, 750,000 Palestinians fled in terror or were actively expelled from their ancestral homeland and turned into refugees. The State of Israel then refused to allow them to return and either destroyed their villages entirely or expropriated their land, orchards, houses, businesses, and personal possessions for the use of the Jewish population. This was the birth of the State of Israel. We know it is hard to accept emotionally, but in this case, the Jewish people are in the wrong. We took most of Palestine by force from the Arabs and blamed the victims for resisting their dispossession. That's interesting. We took most of Palestine from them by force and then blamed the Arabs, the victims of this, for resisting their dispossession. In other words, for becoming terrorists, etc. If you run into someone's car, for whatever reason, simple justice demands that you repair it. If you crash into someone's car, our moral obligation to the Palestinian people is no less clear. It is time for all Jewish people of good conscience to make amends to the Palestinians in order to live up to the best part of the Jewish tradition, its ethical basis. And I'm going to read that again, because this is intrinsic to the peace process for everyone to fully recognize and understand this. It is time for all Jewish people of good conscience to make amends to the Palestinians in order to live up to the best part of the Jewish tradition, its ethical basis, the ethical basis of Judaism. Any criticism of Israel is traditionally seen by American Jews as harmful to the Jewish people, even if the criticism is true. But once we start down the slippery slope where the ends justifies the means, we've left behind any claim to morality. Along with millions of other American Jews, unaffiliated with the major U.S. Jewish organizations, we are outraged at the Israeli government's ongoing oppression of the Palestinians and feel that it has been the ruination of the moral high standing, of the high moral standing of the Jewish people. Here in America, we Jews, and I'm reading from something here, I am not Jewish, but here in America, we Jews are thoroughly assimilated into the mainstream of society. We can afford to change our attitude from, is it good for the Jews, to, is it good? At the very least, American Jews need to categorically state that we cannot condone Israel's illegal occupation of Palestinian land, their illegal strangling of Palestinian life via these closures, and the intentional murder and crippling of Palestinian protesters armed only with rocks, as documented in reports by the UN Security Council, the UN Human Rights Commission, Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, Israeli groups like B'Tselem, etc., etc. According to a survey commissioned by the five largest American Jewish organizations, but suppressed by them afterwards, 20% of American Jews support Palestinian demands, and 35% say that Jerusalem should be shared. This was a survey commissioned by the five largest American Jewish organizations, who then suppressed those findings. This in the face of a near-total blackout of the Palestinian position in our press is very impressive. In a negative way, of course. Join this growing segment of American Jews by contacting Not In My Name at www.nimn.org, a group that is spearheading a coalition of Jewish groups to protest the Israeli occupation. Israel's long-term interests can best be served by supporting Israeli peace groups like Gush Shalom, www.gush-shalom.org, not the Israeli government and its brutal repression, which just leads to endless violence. Israeli peace groups rightfully criticize their government, and we should too. We American Jews should too, since the Israeli government claims to act in our name. Don't compromise your ethics in blind support of bad policies. Work for a just solution instead. Please write for more free copies of this booklet to the address on the back page, I'll remind you before we give up here, and ask your Jewish friends to consider the information presented here. For everyone's sake, peace. Now that's the conclusion that was intended for Jewish readers. Now conclusion two, presumably for the non-Jews and the Martians. Well, at least for everyone who is not Jewish. Conclusion. We hope that this book Sorry. We hope that this look at the historical record concerning the root cause of the Middle East conflict will give second thoughts to all who have previously supported Israel's actions. The persecution of Jews for centuries in Europe was the worst of many stains on the European record, and the Zionist desire for a place of sanctuary is certainly understandable. Like all other colonial enterprises, however, Zionism was based on the total disregard of the rights of the indigenous habitants. As such, it is morally indefensible. And as previously stated, all subsequent crimes, and there have been many on both sides, inevitably follow from this original injustice to the Palestinians. Given the damage that has been done to the Palestinian people, Israel's moral obligation is to make whatever amends possible. Among these should be assisting the creation of a sovereign Palestinian state in the entire West Bank and Gaza with its capital in East Jerusalem. At the conclusion of this conclusion, I have a comment to make about that. Israel should not object to the state, Palestinian state, alongside Israel, and, in addition, should help with this foundation via generous reparations. Should help with its foundation via generous reparations. Besides being the right thing to do, this would stop the sporadic acts of violence against Israel, as the Palestinians' legitimate desire for their own state would be realized. Moreover, all laws that discriminate against non-Jews living in Israel should be repealed, referring to Arabs living in the Israeli state. All citizens should enjoy full and equal rights, which they presently do not, I'm adding that, continuing, as should any Palestinians who wish to return to their ancestral homeland. These refugees should, as a matter of principle, be compensated for their lost homes and land. As U.S. citizens, we have a special obligation to see that justice is done in this matter. U.S. financial aid to Israel has been and continues to be enormous, and our diplomatic support allows Israel's continued occupation of Arab territories. We strongly recommend that you contact your elected representatives in Washington and urge them to pressure Israel to abide by the consensus of world opinion, as shown by numerous United Nations votes, as a precondition of continued support. In other words, don't just pull all support from underneath the Israelis and with no adequate explanation and refuse to reinstate it. Pressure Israel to abide by the consensus of world opinion as a precondition of any further support, financial support. Now, as it says here, American Jews in particular have a special responsibility to acknowledge the Palestinian point of view. Not necessarily adopt it, just acknowledge their point of view in order to help move the debate forward. As Chomsky writes in his Peace in the Middle East, quote, "In the American Jewish community, there is little willingness to face the fact that the Palestinian Arabs have suffered monstrous historical injustice, whatever one may think of the competing claims. Until this is recognized, discussion of the Middle East crisis cannot even begin." End quote. And then we finish this booklet with the final paragraph. "In the long run, only by admitting their culpability and making amends can Israelis live with their neighbors in peace. Only then can the centuries-old Jewish tradition of being a people of high moral character be restored. And only in this way can real security, peace, and justice come to this ancient land." Now, as promised, a reminder for if you want to order or acquire, I don't know how much, if any, money is needed to do this. If you want more copies of this book, the title is The Origin of the Palestine-Israel Conflict, the third edition, including Intifada 2000, is published by Jews for Justice in the Middle East. It's distributed by If Americans Knew. And you could contact them at this phone number in Washington, D.C., area code 202-631-4060. Again, area 202 631-4060, or by email at contact@ifamericansknew.org. contact@ifamericansknew.org. A couple of my statements that I promised. You know, it would really be really helpful if I had a publication date of this. I don't think this was published sometime after 2000. That's all I can say. And from what I remember of the dates given in the items in the book. But they emphasize as they see it as a given that the only way to peace in the Middle East between these two peoples is a state for each, both sovereign and hopefully democratic, truly democratic and non-sectarian, not religiously based, a Palestinian state and a continued Israeli state. They see the answer as dividing Palestine along the lines of the UN partition of 1948. I have long since given up on that. The only answer, ultimately, is a single, unitary, secular by law, and democratic state with equal rights for Jews and for non-Jews. Israel has brought, and done this quite intentionally, built up Jewish presence all over Palestine, quite deliberately, in order to completely forgo transition to two states. And they're not going to give up those settlements and settlement blocks. There's going to be huge backlash by Jewish settlers and Jews, some Jews in Israel, if you try to vacate those illegal Jewish settlements. Just like what happened in the Gaza Strip, those Jewish settlers fought tooth and nail, some of them did anyway, before they were forced to vacate those properties, illegal as they were. Same thing happened after the first Camp David talks, beginning in 79, when Israel gave up the Sinai Peninsula. They had to push to the ground and hand clasp Jewish settlers there to force them to leave that Egyptian Arabic land. So no two-state solution. I am a Palestinian-American from a Christian Palestinian-Christian family. I have been aware of the situation there for all of my adult life. I've been intermittently active during the first half of my adult life anyway, and I've been aware of a lot of this stuff since I was a little kid. So there are indeed those of Palestinian birth or extraction who live in the United States, and many of those are Christian, not just Muslim or others. And this whole thing about Israel making reparations to the Palestinians. Well, you may say, oh, man, that's never going to happen. Well, historically, you're absolutely right, because in case you didn't know this, reparations by the Jews, by the Israelis, to the Palestinians who suffered, lost life, lost their land, and were not able to return to their homelands, reparation, in addition to being allowed to return to their homes and properties, was promised by the nascent Israeli state, this newly born Israeli state, as a condition for Israel's admittance to the United Nations. They were allowed to join the UN, and guess what, folks? Israel never lifted a finger to abide by those promises. That's the end of our show. Now, having a studio again, I look forward to full book readings on the Saturday edition of Mideast Migraines, which comes to you on Free Radio Santa Cruz every Saturday at 11 a.m., 1100 hours Pacific time. Book readings will follow, but I want to get one more important pamphlet out of the way, because I was thinking about this topic recently and I've heard about this. Next Saturday will begin a slightly shorter booklet. Also from If Americans Knew. It's called A War for Israel, having to do with America's war in Iraq. It's written by Jeffrey Blankfort, a photojournalist and Middle East analyst. A War for Israel, next Saturday, 11 a.m. Don't forget, you may join me at this Free Radio Service's other hour-long edition of Mideast Migraines on Monday at 3 p.m. That's 1500 hours Pacific. 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Monday, Saturday at 11. My name is Ren Tawil. contact me at MideastMadness@gmx.com. Thanks for not bothering with phone calls, since I can't thank you for calling. Unless you tried to call and something didn't come through here. Okay. Until next time, do what you can, but behave yourself.